Hi guys, welcome to the next episode of Doc Game. This is going to continue our inventory and store system project. So in the last one, we built up the UI for the store system. In this one, we're gonna hook up the store with our scriptable objects so that we can kind of start to populate data, and then we'll work in a little bit of game logic in terms of when we show and hide the UI. So we'll just get started right away. I've made a few changes since the last project. Nothing tremendous. You can see the UI is just a little bit different in terms of coloring. And then I've also added this little X button. I realized we had no way to actually close the UI. So we'll hook that up, but really to show you, the close button is on the same level as the header. And then it uses the same button that we saw in the store container for the buy button. It's that same brown button, just a little smaller, and then the text I put is the X. So you'll just want to create a button, which I think I'm just realizing we didn't really talk about in the last one. But if you right click UI, button is just another component that you can work with. But you just kind of create that in. You don't have to worry about hooking it up. We'll talk about that in this one, and just get the image size set and then your text set, and then the positioning, and you'll be all caught up. The other thing that I did was, if we take a look at the store item container, I went through and kind of reworked the layout a little bit. I did the things that I mentioned in the end of the last video, where I added kind of an image inside of an image. We'll actually populate the child image. I feel like it's image inception. Image inside of an image inside of another image. But we'll hook up the child image, and then of course we still have our same text and stuff, and then we've got the same area for our currencies. So just it's really just laid out a little bit better in terms of the sizing and the positioning. Not too much changes. So go ahead and delete that off. So like I said, actually the other thing that I did was I went ahead and I created the data. So two videos ago, we talked about scriptable objects, and we worked together on defining really what the item would look like if we went to create this object. So we defined the armor, the consumable, the generic, and then the weapon. So all of these, as well as the currency. So all of this is the same stuff that was defined in part two. The only thing that I did is I just went and created some of those items. So I think I actually might have everything here, but we can take a look. So really, you just go create item, and then I reorganize this, but you'd pick one of these. Let's just do, what am I on? I'm on armor, do another armor. Another hat, I don't know. I gotta delete that, I didn't mean to have that there, but basically, so you can just right-click, create, and then define your properties like we talked about before. It's all pretty standard. And just build out a few different items. The organization of how you store the data is totally up to you. We're going to create, to start, we're going to basically create an inventory scriptable object that is going to be used to define what a merchant has in terms of their inventory items. So, actually, I accidentally had that left in from when I was walking through. So again, just create out some data elements based off of that, and then you'll be completely caught up to where I deviated a hair. To do this, we're just going to create a new inventory class. I'm going to drop the namespace, and we're going to just derive Unity Engine from scriptable object, very similar to what we did when we defined the armor, consumable, and other items. And then we'll just do public list and then the last thing is we do want to do a we want to have another asset menu item. So we want to be able to pick this from the menu. So create asset. We'll do menu name. We'll go item inventory. And then file name. We'll do, I don't know, inventory data. So again, what this line does is this puts it as a, item in the menu. So when we go here and we go create and we go item, save it. There we go, saw Unity, load it, item. Now we have the inventory item there. So what we'll do is we'll create the inventory data and we'll just call this general merchant inventory. And what we have is a list. And I think I've created, I wanna say it's 4 items. So you can just expand the list, basic staff. So you can pick our objects. And see, I define the staff, a health potion, a mana potion, and a wizard hat. And then that's it. So now we basically have our database. And we can tie this to any merchant that we want to create kind of an instance of this if we wanted to. So what we can do is start to write the code to hook this up. So the first thing that we'll want to do is actually change our merchant up a bit. One of the problems with how this was built originally was when we're doing a check to see whether or not we've clicked on the merchant, click on her, that check actually hits this outer sphere. And the problem is we might be navigating around the merchant or near the merchant, but we didn't actually click on him, so we don't really want the store to pop up. So it's a really, really weird player experience when you click right here just to move and then the dialogue pops up. So what we basically needed to do is we need to separate out this sphere for our proximity check from this kind of box sphere that we have. Really, if you've clicked anywhere close enough in this box sphere, like it's so close that it counts in my mind. So the first thing that we have to do is really kind of just adjust the merchant, which apparently I forgot to delete out, so I've already done this. So the merchant originally had a box collider and then the sphere, sphere collider. And so really all I did is I created an empty game object and I moved the sphere collider, which you can do if you click on the little gear, you can click on it and do copy component. And then if you go to another game object, you can click on this again and do paste component as new, or if you already have a component that's like that, you can paste the values to adjust it. So this is also actually super useful if you're trying to align stuff up in like your transform or your rotation and things like that. You can really just copy these values out and then paste them there, or copy like a script to another script. So I just kind of copied both the sphere collider and then the general interaction script and put them on this empty game object that's a child of the merchant. The other thing that I did is I made sure that the layer tag was set to default. And that's because we're actually going to do we're going to do a check. Actually, I don't know that that's necessary. I think this might not be necessary. I think I might have come up with another solution. So we'll see as we go down. We're hitting uncharted territory now. You guys are coming along for the journey. So I did set this to default because I think I was planning on doing a different raycast, but ended up doing it a little differently. And then the other thing is, so the layer for the merchant was NPC. The tag was empty. So I just added a tag, hit the plus button, typed merchant, and then was using this for a check a little bit later that you'll see. So the top level merchant, you want to change the tag to say merchant. Make sure the layer says NPC. And then it should only have the box collider and the nav mesh obstacle and then the animator tied to it. The sphere collider and the general interaction script are on an empty game object that you can call whatever you want. I called proximity check. That's a child of your merchant. And those are just kind of required again for the reasons that I had explained. So to have this work right, we can go ahead and update the general interaction script to start. I think that was here. Oops, this guy. Close out that. Actually, we'll close this out. Okay. I didn't clear it out. I'm so sorry, guys. So the first thing that we're going to do is do a parent transform. So we're adding a new variable, global variable, for the parent transform. And this is because, so the general interaction script was originally written with the intent of it being on the merchant game object. So anywhere that we had transform.whatever, it was doing that on, it was doing that on whatever object it existed on. So it was doing it on the merchant. The problem is now if we do transform.rotation, it's doing it to this child object, which has no effect, right? It's not going to control the model. It's only going to control really, technically, I guess, maybe the sphere collider as it rotates around, but not the right interaction. So what we need is to have a reference of its parent, which is the merchant. So we created a private transform parent, a private variable that's a transform type called parent transform. I think I might need to clean this up a little bit. But so parent transform is basically saying you can get the parent by doing transform.parent. So this is basically saying, hey, tie me to the parent's transform. So that just gets added in start. And then throughout here, what I ended up doing is anywhere that had transform.rotation, I changed to be parent transform.rotation in the rotate towards. So if we highlight that, you can kind of see I did it up in our directions, a couple spots throughout. So really just want to reset that so that it's always adjusting and pulling the values off of the parent's transform and not its own transform. Again, just because logically we've moved where this this game object exists. Okay, so with that fixed, you can see as you move, a good test to make sure everything is if she ends up rotating. I don't know why she didn't rotate. Oh, I know why she didn't rotate. I think she might have some bad logic in her, so I'll have to take a look and see. That was working before. Anyway, you can see the most important part in the change that we've made, though, that would affect the merchant is that the merchant is rotating and rotating back. She's not rotating. The player one isn't, which we'll have to take a look at and see if it's a quick fix as we start to build this out. Okay, so now we can add a merchant interaction class. So all right, so this is going to inherit from, this is going to inherit from mono behavior. Excuse me. And the point of this class is to really handle whether or not we want to have the UI pop up. And then this is where we would put any merchant-specific behavior. So as we start to build out the logic for maybe removing an item or, you know, buying and selling, some of that logic will probably be in this class. For now, this one's primarily going to handle the showing of the UI. So to do that, we can do private inventory. Oh, we're also going to define the list. So we're going to create a variable that holds that data list that we had created a little bit earlier that ties it to the merchant. Store UI. So the thing about this is I want to create a reference to the store UI. And the reason that I'm going to do it in this manner is because we're going to start out with this stuff deactivated, so doing a hierarchy traversal can be a bit tricky. I think there is a way where you can traverse down and find inactive objects, but it's going to go through every single inactive object on top of the active objects, which can be a little bit costly. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to set these up so that we can add them in the inspector and drag and drop them. Now, if we go to the merchant and we add this script, you'll see that there's no properties to do, and that's because I've set these as private. Now, there are two ways around this. You can either make everything public, or you can serialize the field for the private variables that you want to see. So if we add that to both and we let Unity do its thing, we can now see those in the list. So we could populate the data, Here, we can give a reference to the store UI, which is somewhere here. There it is. All to our private variables. Alternately, we could have, again, done like the on awake or on start. We could have done some sort of game object traversal if we wanted to. There's lots of different ways that you could approach something like this. Okay, so the other thing that we're going to learn about today. Oops, I enumerator is coroutines. So these are super handy. So a coroutine is basically a really handy way that lets you perform an action over multiple frame updates. So usually when you have a method, it's going to execute everything in that method, and then it's going to give control back to Unity when it's done. With a coroutine, you can specify certain criteria that have it the routine itself pause and hand control back to Unity, in which case Unity will, for the next frame update, and then it'll come back and check it. And if the criteria has been met, it'll continue. If it hasn't been met, it'll pause and give control back. And so it's a great way to do coded animations, if that's what you're doing. It's also a really great way to like wait for certain things to change. So a good example of this is actually one of the games that I'm working on right now. We have like game modes tied to it. And there are certain criteria that needs to happen for the game mode to progress. And so we'll do a wait to see whether or not that criteria has happened. And if so, it'll continue down the game mode logic. So it can be very, very handy. Now, the reason we're airing out is because it requires a yield return type of statement. So to show you this, we'll do yield return. And you can do a couple different types of these. There's actually, I want to say it's like four or five maybe. There's a few. So if I do, I'm gonna have to fix something to make this actually happen because I don't think the other one has it. But we're gonna do a delegate that basically waits for move controller. And I'm gonna make this isn't there, but I'm gonna make the is moving property that's already there public. Oops. Sorry. Try that again. Not public, false. All right. I'll explain this in 1 second. Let me go fix the movement controller's code. So we already had this property defined as a private, which is moving. So we're just going to turn that public. Public, apparently. What did I mess up on my syntax here? Oh, I know. New. Missed my new keyword. Okay. So basically what we've done is we've said, okay, when this coroutine gets called, the first thing it's going to do is it's going to yield return, and it's going to wait until is moving is set to false. So the idea behind this is if we click on the merchant and our player starts to move, what's going to actually happen is the store UI would pop up right away if we didn't wait until they at least made it to our person, right? The actual behavior that we would want is our player navigates to the person, and then once it's reached its destination, and again, assuming that they've actually clicked the person and not clicked around it, after it's hit its destination, then the UI would pop up. But we need a good way to be able to tell whether or not that's happened. And so I went with coroutine, and then we'll just check to see if they've moved, is moving is false. And so technically, we could have stuffed some of this logic in we could have not stuffed this particular logic, but we could have probably done something, an update that triggers it. But the reason I went coroutine was because I kind of wanted to do this monitoring of a specific variable. It just seemed like the easiest way to tell when the movement has stopped. It does create a couple of complications, which we'll go over very shortly. The other thing that I noticed with this behavior was even when the movement stopped, they were still rotating. So in some scenarios, it was like it happened, the UI would pop up a little bit too quickly. Now, I could do the same thing where I do some checks against whether or not anybody's moving or rotating, and if nobody's rotating, do it. But instead, what I noticed timing-wise is we could actually just pause it for a second or two, and then everybody was done rotating and everything was good. So that actually has another type of way to check it, which is wait for seconds. So you can specify a certain amount of seconds. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to wait until we're done moving, and then when we're done moving, we're going to wait another second. And then when that second is passed, that is when we will do, we will surface up the UI. So the first thing I want to do is make sure that the parent, which is that canvas, is set to active, just to be safe. And then the second thing is we're going to set the actual store portion of the UI. So we've created a reference to the store. But just because the store is turned on, which you can see it actually is right now, doesn't mean that the canvas, you can see it because the canvas is shut off. So actually what we probably want is the reverse of this, which we could leave the canvas on, might have some click-through stuff depending on how you're doing it. So it's up to you on if you want to shut the canvas off versus leaving it on. And what the UI has inside of it, and then we'll shut off the store, and then really this is the most important one that ends up getting toggled. So again, kind of looking through the code just to do a quick review, we have an enumerator or coroutine. That coroutine is actually going to take in movement controller, which is this script, and this script is what has the reference to is moving. And then we're going to wait until they're done. The player has finished moving, so they've reached their destination. Once they've finished, we're going to wait for another second just to make sure everyone's done rotating. And then we're going to make sure that the canvas, or really the parent of the store UI, is active. And then we're going to make sure that the store UI is active. And then the coroutine is done at this point. So to start a coroutine, you actually have technically three different options. Start UI coroutine. So I'm skipping words. I can't talk today. I don't know what's wrong with me. So you can do it in a few ways. You can just type start coroutine. And then you can see there's a couple different overloaded methods. So you can provide a routine directly. You can provide it as a string. And then you can pass in stuff. So it's really, the two typical are you'd either pass in the routine or you'd pass it in quotes. Now, the caveat behind these is with start coroutine comes stop coroutine. So you have stop coroutine and you have stop all coroutines. Now, for the most part, coroutines have been fairly reliable, but the couple of areas that I've run into where they haven't been is really in the stopping of the coroutines. Most of the time, I think they've always start, but the stopping can be a little bit tricky. So, for example, as I was running through this project originally, I had written this up so that the movement controller started the coroutine, and then another area did the stopping. And they both did it in, I think at least, they both had done it in the same way where they were referencing the method directly, but my stop coroutine was getting completely and utterly ignored. So then I started to walk through a few tests. I tried stop all coroutines, still wasn't stopping it. It still would execute. And so then I started to do some research and some digging because I'd done it a while ago, but I couldn't remember exactly why. And there are a couple little mishaps that can happen. So for example, if you start a coroutine and let's say you pass in the method directly and then you do stop coroutine and you pass it in quotes, that provides like this weird mismatch where some scenarios it won't actually stop the coroutine. So you have to start and stop in the same method that you do it in. And there are other kind of weird nuances behind it. So the most, the longest explanation ever, the most reliable is the word I'm looking for. The most reliable way that I found to do this is to store a reference to the coroutine and then use that reference to stop it later. So that's what we're going to do. So we're going to do, let's see, what did I call this? We're going to do I guess store, oops. So what we'll do is we'll do, so if StoryLine does not equal null, so we're gonna do a check to make sure that the coroutine has been stopped before it starts. So what could happen is we could have multiple of these that are running because maybe we started it several times and then the UI, you know, runs into some weird behavior if we like decided to expand this beyond more than what it is. Right now with how it is, you probably really wouldn't notice if it was running multiple ones, because it's not like it's setting it off and then turning it on or doing anything, but you still kind of run the risk of triggering it multiple times. So in this scenario, what I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna check to see if you're null or if it's null. And if it's not, we're gonna stop it. Oop, cool. There we go. So we'll stop it first and then we'll do start, or actually we'll do, oh, I actually need to do movement controller, move controller. So basically we're just gonna set this coroutine to the variable and then we'll go start coroutine and then store UI. Oops, store UI coroutine. There we go. And then this will be stop coroutine, store UI. Pretty simple. Let's zoom out just a hair. Hope you can still see that. Again, so to kind of take a look, we've got our coroutine. We've already gone through that. We have a method to start the coroutine. And that is going to check to make sure that there's not one already running. If it is, then it's going to stop it. And then it'll start it again. Okay, so that's really what we need, I think, for this. The other side that we have to do to make this fully work is back over in the movement controller, we need to add some logic to actually trigger that we've clicked on the merchant. So there are a few things that we can do. We're actually gonna do it in this section here. So basically, we've clicked on an NPC. This is where that merchant tag that I described earlier comes into play. So we'll leave all of this logic the same, but we're gonna do another check that says if hit.transform, so remember hit is whatever object was hit by our raycast, that tag.equals. We can check to see if the tag is equal to merchant. And then this is the other neat thing. So we could do, I think this probably technically isn't needed, but I wanted to show it to you. We can do a check to see what collider was actually hit. So when you're doing collision detection, it's really just detecting, okay, actually, let me show this to you. So remember, we had originally on the merchant, we had two. We had the box collider, and then we had the proximity check. If you have a scenario where you have a different type of collider, because you can't have the same collider on the same object. We couldn't have multiple sphere colliders, but we can have a sphere and a box collider, and I think there's one more, on the same object. And if you hit that, you can basically check to see if it was a box collider or sphere collider or anything. So if you had different behavior that you wanted to check for, you can do that, which is pretty handy little trick. So, again, I don't actually think that it's needed in this scenario, but I'm gonna leave it. So the other thing to make this work is we're gonna get the merchant interaction component, and then we're gonna start that store UI coroutine, and we'll pass in this this class. I think that'll work. Famous last words, let's see. No build problems, I like that. We got her kind of next to it. No UI, I didn't click on her, so that's expected. Let's click on her. We're taking the long way. Very long way, not sure what we're doing. Ah, there we are. She was really taking the long way. All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and stop this part here. We took a look at coroutines and kind of set up the starting behavior. On the next episode, we'll go ahead and finish out the UI in terms of closing it, locking out movement, and then, of course, the most important thing, which is populating our data into that UI. So there's no challenge for this episode. At the end of the next one, we'll have two challenges that'll cover what we've looked at in the coroutines and then cover some of the stuff that we're going to look at in the next episode. So thanks for joining, and I'll see you next time. We'll be right back.